This is the Manufacturing Report. I'm Scott Paul.
We have found that people are really happy to know they're buying an American-made product. They may not notice that at first, but once they see, like, oh, the price is a little high. Oh, wait, it's made in America. Okay, that justifies it.
Tori Tissell was just out of design school and deep in debt when she found herself facing a holiday season without any cash to buy gifts for her friends and family. So she turned to her ingenuity, her know-how, and one of her passions, and created what became Story Arts, a company that imprints literary passages on all sorts of fabric. Tori's story next on the Manufacturing Report. Let's get started. And I'm honored to be joined by Tori Tissell and Christian Plover of Story Arts, an amazing company that makes all sorts of products that have favorite passages from books printed right on them. Tori and Christian, thank you for so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're honored to be here.
Great. So, Tori, I wanted to turn to you first because I think the story, the foundation story of Story Arts is a really interesting one. You described yourself as someone who was fresh out of design school and living, well, the typical kind of student debt life. And it sounds like what became Story Arts was kind of an invention that you made to fill a need for some holiday gifts. Do you want to share that with the audience?
Yeah, I can elaborate a bit. You're spot on, though. I like to say that this started out of desperation because I was just barely making it by, and so couldn't really afford to buy presents for my friends and family. And one day, while actually reading a book, the idea came to me to take some of these passages from literature that I liked so much and to print them on fabric, because I knew my friends and family liked the same kind of types of books that I did. And when I was first shopping for some fabric, I came across a really pretty cream-colored material. And so the idea developed even more because I thought, hey, if I used this, it would actually look like I took a page out of a book and wrapped it around my neck for a scarf. So that's where the idea came from. I made them for those I wanted to gift, and then I made a few extra, and that's how it started.
And so did you think in your own mind that this could become a sustainable business? And if those around you, if you shared this idea with them, kind of, did they encourage you, or did they say, Tori, that's kind of crazy. There's no way this could work.
Yeah, that question does make me laugh because I never had a desire to start a business. I mean, I went to design school, not business school. I was just hoping to try to pay down some of those student loans. And I never thought that here I would be like 7 years later still doing it. But I did get a lot of support from those people around me, which is so encouraging to be able to, you know, use my talents and passions and create a product. So, yeah, it was really nice to have that encouragement from those people dear to me.
And Christian, I wanted to ask you, where do most of Story Art products get assembled and manufactured?
Yeah, we're located in a suburb of Portland, Oregon, and all of our product is created here in Portland. So our fabric comes from California. It's made in America cotton that we ship up from California, and then everything else is produced here in Portland. So we have three local screen printing companies that do the printing for us. We have a local seamstress that sews all the products for us, and then everything is warehoused and shipped out by ourselves. So we employ some high school and college age students that do all the shipping for us. So everything here is made locally in Portland.
And I know that's part of the company's ethos, and I wanted to turn back to Tori for a second to say, you know, how did you arrive at that from doing these kind of local, what I would say kind of Etsy-style projects to something much more formal with a supply chain and all that? What motivated you to source locally?
Kind of a two-part answer. I wanted to stay local first. That's just how it naturally grew. We found people nearby who could fill the needs that we had. And then because of my design background, you can't help but learn about how things are made overseas. And I was never a huge fan of that. So I take pride in my country and take pride in offering jobs here to people. And so it all made sense to keep it local. And then you can have your hands more in things. Since we have a solid product, it helps to be able to go look at that product, go check on it when it's not, you know, a country away. It made me happy ethically, and it made a lot of sense.
I imagine there's a lot of entrepreneurs who want to do what you have done, which is to turn an idea into a business and to have a sourcing model that you feel really good about. But Christian, I imagine that there's some challenges that come up along the way in trying to actualize this, because, you know, so, particularly in the fabric world, I guess there are some American-made options, but do you kind of have to hunt them out, or do they come knocking on your door?
No, I would definitely say that it's a little bit more challenging, and it's a conscious effort to be able to keep things sourced locally. I don't want to say every day, but often I get requests from different suppliers, different manufacturers that would be willing to make our products or give us fabric from that's sourced from outside of the States for, you know, a cheaper cost or, you know, a better price here or there. And we just have set it as a part of our company's, you know, kind of goals and standards to stay local. And with that, we have to dig a little deeper and, you know, hunt a little deeper into finding exactly what we're looking for. But at the same time, like, just to reiterate what Tori said, having our products here allows us a lot of freedom in manufacturing. Our turnaround times are a lot quicker. We have a better control of the manufacturing process. Like Tori said, we can go and, you know, visit with our screen printers on a Tuesday afternoon and not have to, you know, get an international flight to fly over and set meetings. It helps with our research and development, designing new products. We work hand in hand with our companies that produce for us. And so, you know, as you put the items on a scale, we feel that even though there are some challenges and there are some difficulties, and yeah, we may be paying a higher price on some of the materials and labor, the benefits outweigh those other options.
And let's ask how your customers feel about that. I mean, do you get positive feedback based not only on, you know, the types of products you offer, the passages from literary giants that you include, but also from the sourcing as well?
Yeah, we have found that people are really happy to know they're buying an American-made product. They may not notice that at first, but once they see, like, oh, the price is a little high. Oh, wait, it's made in America. Okay, that justifies it. And then they expect a higher quality, which is great because most people are buying online. So when you see an image and you see our little note saying everything's made, sourced locally, people, I think, get a little more confident in their purchase choice. And, it's because of our social media presence, we have the opportunity to get that kind of feedback, not just on the way we make things, but like you said, the titles that we use. And it's a real joy to hear that people fully support the way we do things and what we use for those things.
That must be very validating as a founder of an enterprise like that to hear. I wanted to shift gears for a second and ask you, what was the first literary imprint that you did? What book was it from and why?
Well, there were three, actually, so I hope that's okay.
You bet.
So initially I used The Bible, I used Pride and Prejudice, and A Tale of Two Cities. And I was reading at least two of those at the time, so that was what was in my head. But I just also knew that the people who I would be giving these to enjoyed those works also, and it was kind of a simple decision from there to use some of the most popular parts from those books.
That's very thoughtful. And how does the process work in generating new ideas for both authors, their titles, and the book passages?
Well, if you ever start a business, people love to give you their advice. And so we've gotten lots and lots of suggestions, and we've run with a lot of them. But like I said before, because of social media, we can easily take in information from our customers. So we have done some surveys, and through those responses, we have figured out what people want, and then we make it. And I personally like to use books that maybe have a little bit of a moral to them. So I incorporate that when we can. But as we grow, I like to get opinions from my teammates as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and it's good that you have a platform like social media to draw in lots of those suggestions. That seems to be a big help. I had a couple of very practical questions for you. I wonder if you worry about knockoffs at all, and if you also have licensing challenges, or what the process is in dealing with some of these texts. I assume some are copyrighted, or there might be different, you know, various forms of protections. But how do you navigate that as a small business?
You know, that's probably been the hardest thing for me personally, since I see this business as my baby. And I initially researched to make sure there wasn't a product that existed that was similar to what I was aiming for. And so, yeah, we have had some other companies start to make things that look like what we do. But thankfully, we were able to obtain a patent design. And that means that nobody is legally allowed to make a product that could be confused with ours. So it's nice to have that authority in our back pocket when needed. And, you know, we've reached out to people when necessary. We've gotten our lawyers involved when necessary, thankfully not often. But it's usually been a pretty quick issue because of that design patent that we have.
In regards to licensing and the titles that we've selected, when the company was first started, we went with most titles that were a part of the public domain, purely because we wouldn't have to get licensing agreements for those titles. That kind of formed some of our selection by choosing titles like Pride and Prejudice and Alice in Wonderland and, you know, some of those classic titles. But as we've grown as a company, we've had the opportunity to take on new licensing agreements with some great authors. And some of the bigger ones that we've taken on recently have been with Dr. Maya Angelou, and we've produced some products, including Still I Rise for her. We're currently working on a project for Roald Dahl, so we'll be launching Matilda and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and James and the Giant Peach. We've had a license agreement with E. Cummings, Patrick Rothfuss, we have The Great Gatsby, and several others. And so that has you know, as we've built our brand and we've made story art kind of a known commodity in the kind of like bookish community, authors have not only reached out to us to inquire about, you know, putting their work on our products, but we've also kind of opened the door to being able to ask some of these authors that everyone on the team loves if they would be willing to let us make their products. And so It's been really fun. The licensing side is definitely something that we're growing in on the business side, but there's a lot of opportunity there for us as well.
Yeah, I can only imagine the gap that exists between the enthusiasm of the fans and what you are realistically able to do with respect to licensing. But it sounds like you're navigating that particularly well. You mentioned something, Christian, that I wanted Tori to expand upon, and that's the relationship with the bookish world or the literary world. And I know that you know, Story Arts is obviously a kind of a passion project that grew into a small business, but it sounds like that the company maintains a relationship with literacy as well. Tori, do you want to explain that?
Yeah, so we have recently partnered with a nonprofit group called Lit World, and what they do is they set up these book clubs here locally and in other countries to not only encourage reading but also aid in the learning of how to read. So we're really excited to be able to work with them and help fund those projects.
Sounds like an amazing partnership. Before I let you go, two questions. First, what's the best way for our listeners to find out more about Story Arts and the products that you offer?
The best way to find us is online at our own website, www.storyarts.com. And we spell it a little funny. It's S-T-O-R-I-A-R-T-S.
That makes sense to me. And finally, if licensing weren't an issue, what is the one title and passage that you'd like to put up on your products next?
Oh, boy. Hands down, my favorite and the favorite of, like, I don't know, 80% of the world, Harry Potter, is the big fish. That's what we would use.
Yeah, I know a couple of 10-year-olds in our house who would love that. As well. So,
I like their taste.
Yeah, indeed. Well, there's the world of possibilities there. And even if you can't land J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter, there's tons of other really amazing titles and passages. And I want to salute you, Tori, and Christian as well for making this possible and for bringing this to the attention of not only the Alliance for American Manufacturing, but I think lots of really interested and engaged consumers all across the world. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
That's very kind of you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That was Christian Plover and Tori Tissell with Story Arts. You can find out more information about the company and their products at www.storiarts.com. That's storyarts.com. As always, I want to thank the great teams at E18 and AAM for making this podcast possible. And I want to remind you, the listeners, that you can connect with us on Twitter at Keep It Made in USA, on our Facebook page, and online at AmericanManufacturing.org. We'd love your feedback, your comments, and your story ideas. I'm Scott Paul. This has been the Manufacturing Report. Together, we can keep it made in America.